This podcast is certified fresh. Freshmediaworks.com.
Mikey Pod 77, December 20th, 2006. Interview with Millard Fuller. Part 1. That is the artist formerly known as Jane Sibri Issa. I think that's how you pronounce it. With If God Be For Us. I got an email from her. Well, it was a group email thing. But encouraging people to play her music and to share these songs. So if you go to sheba.ca or issalight.com, I think, ISSALIGHT. It's really hard because I can't really play around on the internet like I used to, or like I'll be able to in a week, because the internet is so crappy out here on the farm. But one more week. Saturday, I head to Houston for a week, and then I go to New York City, Brooklyn, where I hope to find a job and an apartment. Yeah, those of you who are just joining me for the first time, this is Michael. I'm right now podcasting, from Koinonia Farm in Americus, Georgia, which is quite historical, and you'll hear more about that from Millard in just a minute. He came by here today. It was really a great interview, and there were just moments in it where, I don't know, I have these times in my life when you're talking to someone and they know nothing about you, but they start answering questions that you've had for all of your life. Has that ever happened to you? It happened to me today with Millard. I think we'll go right into it. Health update. The kidney stone that I went to the hospital for a couple of weeks ago still has not passed. And I'm kind of worried, honestly. I don't have insurance right now, and it sucks. I'm not like in horrible shape, but I mean, it's okay for me just to wander around like this, but you know, it's not great. And I started peeing blood again today, but that'll probably stop. That sounds really bad, but it's not that bad. But I was really worked up about it yesterday. I gave Richard Bluestein an earful on LiveJournal. It's funny. It's really funny. Like yesterday I was going through this whole state of, God, it was so stupid of me to come here and quit my job and give up having insurance, knowing I have these issues with kidney stones. Why would I do this? And then I had this whole, yesterday was awful. And then today I felt better. And then Millard came over and, well, you'll hear the conversation, but it really just, you know, I don't know. It's a really interesting time in my life. Before I forget, I'd like to thank Michelle Gunnett for the donation. Everyone is welcome to give a donation to this show to keep it going. You can just go to the website at MikeyPod.com and click on the little PayPal link. You can leave a little tip or whatever you like. Merry Christmas to everyone. I hope you enjoyed that Jane song. And I wish I could remember exactly what she said. I saw her in Houston a while back, and I think she did that song. And she said the most perfect thing about, you know, sort through your, or something about not closing your mind to the idea of God or to Christianity and all that kind of stuff. And just listen to the song for the message and don't let yourself be blinded by the fact that this is talking about Christianity. Because so many people like me are closed off to that. And it keeps you from learning some other messages. So it's a perfect message for me to give to you before I play this first part of the interview with Millard, because the guy's a Christian. and not everyone has been out here at Koinonia and had the chance to learn and sort of connect with a new kind of openness like I have, although you've been along with the listening. So I just used to have a tendency, and I still do, when people start talking about the Bible or about Jesus, I shut down and stop listening. And I'm really learning that is cheating myself out of learning some things. I mean, I think that it's important to, I mean, being rigid and closed off to Christianity is just like the Christians I was frustrated with, or still am, that are closed-minded and rigid about homosexuality or, you know, anything else. So, you know, it's all about being open-minded and connecting with each other. Ain't that beautiful? I think so. The beginning of this interview is hilarious because I was like, I've learned how to end interviews, but starting them sometimes is a problem, as you'll hear right now. All right, Millard Fuller has joined me today. He is the founder of Habitat for Humanity and also of the Fuller Center for Housing. And he spent time here at Koinonia. So a perfect, I think, guest for my last podcast here from America. So welcome to the show.
And good to be with you here, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things I've been talking about a lot since I've been here has been the idea of sort of what it's like to live in community and give away that sort of material connection that we all have. So that's and in order to be with God and move on and make those decisions based on what we think God wants us to do, etc. So I love that you came here, and I guess some of the how did you first Well, maybe not even. You heard of Koinonia after you sort of made this decision with Linda, right?
No. Actually, I think you know part of my story, but yeah, maybe some of it, you need some gaps to be filled in. My wife, Linda, and I lived in Montgomery, Alabama, which is the capital of Alabama. And both of us were natives of that state. And I had been in a law practice and had gone out of the law practice because my law partner was my business partner, and our business was flourishing. We were making money hand over fist and getting all of the things that money will get for you in life. Big houses, big cars, thousands of acres of land, cattle, horses, speedboats, cabins on the lake, everything. And my marriage began to disintegrate because I was more married to the company than I was to my wife. And she ended up going to New York to contemplate whether she would stay with me or whether she would get a divorce. And I pursued her to New York, and fortunately, we were reconciled. But out of that decision to be reconciled and to stay married, also came a decision to drastically change our lives. And we decided in our situation, we should divest ourselves of our wealth, sell my interest in the company, and give 100% of the money away, and just throw ourselves on God's mercy and ask Him to guide us. Well, we came back from New York, and I got my brand new Lincoln Continental that I had just bought, and got my, at that time we had two children, got them in the car, and we went down to Florida. And my first order of business was to get reacquainted with my children and my wife. I was virtually a stranger in my own household. And so we traveled around in Florida for a couple of weeks and started back to Montgomery with no idea of where we would go or what we would do. We had just decided what we were not going to do. We were not going to continue to live in a materialistic, affluent type of lifestyle, driving around in big cars, living in big houses, making tons of money, and just being a totally materialistic kind of a person. So we stopped down here just south of Americus, and we were having breakfast in the town of Albany. And I remembered that a man named Al Henry, who had been pastoring a church in Birmingham, Alabama, had preached a sermon about integration, in which he said, that's a good idea. We ought to integrate. We ought to integrate the schools. We ought to integrate the churches. And of course, the leaders of the church fired him.
Yeah.
And he had come to a place called Koinonia Farm in South Georgia, a place I'd never heard of. But this man, Al Henry, and his wife, Carol, they had invited my wife and me to come over here and visit them. Well, at that time, we were, you know, up to our eyeballs and getting rich and living the affluent life.
Yeah.
And I just kind of felt sorry for Al and Carol Henry. And I thought to myself, these people have, you know, come up against the forces of this world, and they lost. And they've now retreated to the wilderness, never to be heard from again.
Okay.
I didn't know where Koinonia Farm was. I never heard of Americus, Georgia. Just to me, it was just out in the country in South Georgia, and it was a place that was just lost. And people who went there were losers. And, you know, why would I want to go there? I was a winner. I wasn't a loser.
Right.
And but here we sat having breakfast, and I remembered Koinonia. I didn't know very much about it at all. I never heard of Clarence Jordan. Because if Al Henry had mentioned Clarence Jordan to me, it went in one ear and out the other. It didn't mean anything to me. But here we were. We had decided to change our lives, didn't know where we would go. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe we ought to go see our friends, Al and Carol Henry, and check out this strange Christian community.
Right.
With a strange sounding name. And I wasn't even sure how to spell it or how to pronounce it. So we drove up here. This was the Christmas. It was early December of 1965. And we drove in here intending to stay 2 hours. We had talked about it as we were driving up here from Albany. And we said, let's don't stay past 10:30, 11 o'clock, because then they'll feel obligated to invite us to lunch.
Right.
And they weren't expecting us. And so, you know, we'll just visit a while with our friends and leave. Well, we got here and, you know, as they still do, have had a community lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And they insisted that we stay for lunch. And we went in. They were sitting in on apple crates, I remember, and old rickety tables. And yeah. It was a very different situation from what I was accustomed to. And everybody was sitting around the tables together, and in walks this guy in overalls, had a ruddy complexion, looked like a typical South Georgia farmer. And he sat down across the table from us and started talking. There happened to be a news reporter there that day and a retired Navy chaplain. And they knew this guy, and they were asking him questions. Well, his answers were just astounding to me. I never heard anybody talk like this guy. And I thought, this guy looks like a South Georgia farmer, but he sure doesn't talk like one.
Right.
So by the end of the meal, I was so captivated by this man that I began to believe that maybe God had directed us to this place. And I went outside and talked to Linda, my wife, and I said, you know, maybe God brought us to this place. We weren't planning to come here. This wasn't on our agenda. Mm-hmm. But here we are, and here this guy is just amazing. I never talked to anybody like that.
Yeah.
And so she said, yeah, I feel the same way. So we stayed a month.
Right from that point on, you were here?
Right, for a month. And, you know, as we were walking over here to do this little interview with you, they were in there packing up pecan products.
Right.
Well, that's what they were doing in 1965. They were packing up pecan products. And I joined in with Clarence and helped him pack up pecans. And we'd pack pecans for a while and talk about Jesus for a while and pack up pecans for a while and talk about Jesus for a while. At that time, also, they had an old cow here. You know, I don't think you have a cow here now. But then they had a cow that Clarence milked. And I'm a country boy. I mean, I know how to milk. And I was so eager to talk to Clarence that I signed on. And I would go out there in the morning and evening and milk that cow with him. He'd sit, get on one side and get two, and I'd get on the other side and get two. And we'd squirt milk it in the bucket. And,
yeah.
And between the cow's hind legs and her tail, we'd talk about Jesus. And, you know, I, as you know, in the subsequent years, I have spoken. I've been in about 75 countries and have spoken in literally thousands of churches of all denominations. And people often ask me where I went to seminary. I said, I went to the cow seminary.
Right.
They said, the cow seminary? I never heard of that. And I said, well, you probably haven't, because there's not too many graduates. In fact, I think I'm the only graduate.
Yeah.
But then I would explain how I milked cows with Clarence here at Koinonia, and he opened my eyes to... Even though I had been raised in the church, he opened me, I opened my eyes and introduced me to a Jesus I didn't know, really and truly. Hmm. And that was just a life-changing month for me. And at that time, and even until today, I believe that God brought us here.
Yeah.
Somebody once said, when the student is ready to learn, the teacher appears. Mm-hmm. And Clarence Jordan became our spiritual mentor. And the other thing was, as Linda and I started telling people that we were giving our money away, almost universally, people thought we were nuts.
Yeah.
They thought I was having mental problems. You know, you give money away, you know, you got to be crazy. You know, you give a little bit of money away, you give a little bit to the church, but you always keep most of your money, just give a little bit. And you're going to give all of your money away? That's stupid. But Clarence Jordan said, you have correctly understood what God is calling you to do. He affirmed us in what we were doing. He didn't think we were nuts, and that was so refreshing. And the other people here at Koinonia didn't tell us we were nuts because of what we were doing. They affirmed us and said, you are being obedient to God's claim on your life. And it was that refreshing affirmation that we needed. and that we felt so strongly was said to us literally by God that he brought us here. And of course, that set us on a path that has been a magnificent journey for us over all those years since then. We went away from Cornyn and stayed for, you know, maybe 2.5 years, and then moved back in the fall of 1968. And we were here then for 15 months. I worked almost on a daily basis with Clarence Jordan before he died on October 29th, 1969. But the man had a profound impact on my thinking. And he is... he is really the spiritual father of Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. He had his doctorate in Greek New Testament. He had the clearest understanding of the New Testament of anyone I ever knew. And he gave me insights that I have been guided by over the years in forming and building Habitat for Humanity and putting it in 100 countries and building housing for 1 million people. Mm. And he's now the spiritual father to me of the new work that I've launched now in the Fuller Center for Housing.
Yeah. So with, well, two things, backing up a little bit to when you first decided to come to Koinonia and, you know, mm-hmm. you were giving all your money mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about when I decided to come here, and I was just coming as an intern, but I did make this change in my life of, you know, getting rid of a bunch of my mm-hmm. stuff and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And not, I mean, I was a teacher, so not nearly as much as you gave away, mm-hmm. but a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, this is a cult. And like, even to this point, after I've been here for several months, and it's clearly mm-hmm. not a cult and I haven't mm-hmm. been brainwashed. People are still like asking me questions like, well, do you have access to the outside world? Like, can you watch the news and all that stuff? Was it like that too for you when you?
We had some friends drive over here from Montgomery mm-hmm. When in that first month that we were here, they heard that we were here. And they came over and they stayed here for several hours. And then they said, but Millard, you look so normal. And I said, well, I think I'm pretty normal. Well, you know, what's being said back in Montgomery is that you had a mental breakdown uh-huh. and that you have come here to recover from your mental breakdown. That obviously someone who does what you're doing, giving away your money, is mentally off. Right. That's what we've heard. I said, no, I don't. I think maybe I'm more mentally right than I ever have been in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm getting my priorities right. You know, the Bible says, seek the kingdom first and everything else will be added. The Bible does not say, seek the kingdom first and you won't need anything else. Right. It says, seek the kingdom first and all else will be added. In other words, get your priorities right. And my priorities had gotten totally out of kilter. I had placed material things on top of the list and worked God in down somewhere on the list and worked church and time with my family and faith and helping others and loving people. That was on the list. But top of the list was getting rich and being richer and richer day by day
right.
and getting more and more material things. And that is the opposite of the teaching of the New Testament. The New Testament teaches to seek the kingdom first, and then the other things that you need will be added. And I've often said to people that I have considered myself in the years since I changed my priorities to be my richest years. And it was not that I had a bad life or I was miserable when I was in business. There was a lot about that that was exciting and exhilarating and challenging. But it has been so much better in my own personal experience after I changed my priorities and tried to seek the kingdom first. Or, as Clarence always said, seeking the God movement. That's yeah. what he called the kingdom of God, was the God movement. God has a movement going on in the world, and wise is the person who joins up and signs on to be a part of the God movement, of finding out what God has going on and get to be a part of it. So I consider myself now, and have for years, as a very rich person. I just don't have a huge bank account.
Right.
I'm rich in so many other ways. For example, just the knowledge that more than a million people have a good place to live because of the work that I was privileged to launch, along with my wife, Linda, and a number of other people. So to me, that is more true riches than just having millions of dollars in the bank.
Right. It's interesting. A lot of my, when I came here, I'm not Christian, and I've had like a lot of sort of suspicion of Christians in a way until like meeting people like you and hearing about you and Clarence Jordan and the people that are here. Suddenly I'm like, oh, so these are, because part of my deal was that it seemed like, well, Christians are saying, you know, X, Y, Z, but look at what they're actually doing. But now I've opened my mind and also kind of gotten this connection with people who are really doing what it seems like Christ taught. So in that way, this has been a really rich experience for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing, and you mentioned it, you're a teacher. Something that I came to realize a long time ago is that a person's fundamental character never changes. You are who you are because God made you that way, and you will go to your grave being who you are, the way that God made you. In my case, I am by nature and by character a high energy person, creative, hardworking, hard charging. I was that way when I was in business. I was that way when I started Habitat for Humanity. I'm that way today in running the Fuller Center for Housing and engaging in other activities that I'm involved in. But what has changed is my goals. It's like the Apostle Paul that we read about in the New Testament. He was a hard-charging, you know, passionate, dynamic guy who was busy persecuting Christians, cooperating with those who were killing them. And if he didn't actually kill them, he held a coat so the others could throw rocks at him and kill him.
Right.
And then he had an experience. It's called the Damascus Road experience. He was on the road to Damascus, and a blinding light came, and he had a moment of revelation, and the Bible says Jesus spoke to him and says, "Why are you persecuting me?" And Paul's life changed totally, totally, and he went on into Damascus, and he was well known by reputation of being a harsh persecutor of Christians, and all the Christians that were scared to death of him because they thought he'd come to get them and round them up and have them all stoned to death.
Right.
And he had trouble convincing them that he was one of them now, that he had seen the light. But his character never changed. You know, he became the most aggressive, dynamic, hard-charging missionary the world has ever known. And for the rest of his life, he was tireless in promoting the gospel of Jesus Christ. So his character didn't change, but what changed was his goals.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when people go through something, such as me or you or someone else who goes through an experience and they feel that maybe they've had a religious experience, they feel like they want to change their character. That somehow they need to quit being who they are and start being some other, quote, religious type.
Right.
And maybe go to seminary or develop a ministerial tone to your voice so you can sound like a Baptist preacher because you are now religious. But that's a big mistake because it's like a cat trying to change himself into a dog. A cat is a cat, and he'll be a cat till he dies. But a person has a certain characteristics in his or her character. And those characteristics are implanted on you and embedded in you. And it's a huge mistake to try to basically change who you are as a person.
Huh.
But it is not wrong to change your goals and to use your God-given talents and abilities for a different purpose.
Hmm. Interesting. That's a good message for me, especially at this point, you know. But yeah, those are valuable lessons that I feel like we It's so easy to overlook. You know, I get that too in sort of my process of whatever's, you know, changing my life now, where I'm like, well, I need to become more, you know, whatever. But you're right. I mean, that's a, I hadn't thought about that before. It's not about changing. It's a,
no, you be comfortable with who you are. God made you that way. You know, don't try to change it. Don't try to give yourself some artificial new. Okay, I've had an experience at Koinonia now. I'm a new. I've got to talk differently. I've got to have a different tone to my voice. I'm a more holy person now. I've been I've been at this religious place called Koinonia, and I must be a different, more holy type person. Now, be yourself. But I think what you need to do is to have a continuing quest to find out why God put you on this earth. Why did God make you the way he made you? You know, a man instead of a woman, white skin instead of dark skin, you know, blue gray eyes instead of some other color eyes, and with certain interests.
Yeah.
You know, accept who you are and then just go on a quest to find out why am I like I am? Why did God make me this way? And how can I best utilize who I am to fulfill my highest purpose in life? So that when they lay me in the ground, you know, 20 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, whatever, that my life will not have been lived in vain.
Right.
That I will have really lived. I will have fulfilled my purpose in life. And that's one of the wonderful things that I, among so many that I learned from Clarence Jordan, is that he said, God is broadcasting. God is broadcasting just as sure as radio stations broadcast and just as sure as TV stations broadcast. God is broadcasting. The problem is that most people don't extend their spiritual antenna. They keep them retracted. So you never hear the messages because you aren't listening. You don't listen on a spiritual level to what God is saying to you. But if you extend your spiritual antenna, you will pick up the messages from heaven. Not in some mysterious way, like you all of a sudden you hear a little crackle. Okay, God is coming in now. Listen. Yeah. Okay. Hello, Michael. This is God.
Yeah.
I got instructions for you. That's not the way it happens. But it's like the Bible reveals, it's that still, small voice. It's that sensing a presence. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of realizing that somebody was near you, and this, you realize that there's a presence near you, and you know, and then you just turn around, and there's a person behind you. Sometimes you're startled. But there's a, you realize sometimes that God is there, that you're in a holy place. You're in a presence. And I've had that experience. And if you listen and have your mind attuned, God can speak to you. Not in a hokey way, not in a spooky way, but you just get a sense of what is right. I had that in regard to Koinonia when I first came here. I just had that awesome feeling that God directed us here. And I changed a two-hour visit into a month. But at the end of a month, I didn't have a clear vision about what's next. And so I left. But I was spiritually not at peace. And then I wrote a letter to Clarence Jordan, and I said, Clarence, I've been offered a job down in Mississippi, and I don't feel right about it. It didn't seem right for me. And I said, what do you have up your sleeve? And he wrote me back and said, I don't have anything up my sleeve, but maybe God's got something up his sleeve for both of us. Let's get together and talk.
Yeah.
So I met him in Atlanta, and it was just like, you know, I know you've had that experience, and I'm sure others who are listening to this broadcast have had the experience of meeting someone, and it just all connects.
Right.
You know, you feel there's a soul connection with this person. And Clarence and I just connected, and we decided to be together and to come down here to Koinonia and organize a ministry, a new something. And we ended up calling it Partnership Farming, Partnership Industries, and Partnership Housing.
Right.
And we were going to have a preaching and a teaching phase of what we were doing. And, it was exciting. It was exhilarating, man. I couldn't wait to get out here and get at it. And we came down and reactivated the farming, which had been shut down because of the boycott and all the violence around here.
Yeah.
We reactivated the farming. We started various little industries of making ladies' pants. And we started a tie-dye and dashiki-making shirt operation here and started a worm farm. We bought cattle. We bought hogs. And we had all kind of things going around here. And we started building houses. And the house part of the equation is what took off. Mm-hmm. I mean, all this other stuff is still remnants of it are around here, but a lot of it didn't work out very well. But the housing thing just took off, and we had the first house under construction up here for the Johnson family at Corner Near Village. And on October 29th, 1969, Clarence Jordan died. Boom. Suddenly. He was down in his shack writing a sermon to be delivered at Mercer University. And God called him home. He just leaned his head back against the wall at age 57 and was gone. Just like that.
How's that for a cliffhanger for you? I'll play the rest of this interview on the next podcast, which I'll put up tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow to me is 2 days from now. For you, which by that time, though, will be tomorrow. Right now, it's the 20th, and it's the morning of the 21st. It's 12:11 a.m. So I'm going to have to post this tomorrow afternoon, and I'll record the next part tomorrow and then upload it on Friday. So God knows what day it'll be by then, the 22nd. So I hope you enjoyed this interview. And that's it. I'm going to leave you with this song by Tara Jane O'Neill. It's called The Poisoned Mind. And, feedback, MikeyPod@gmail.com. The website is MikeyPod.com, and you can call 206-339-6682 to send voicemail, and I would really love to hear from you. Thanks.